Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show with guest host Bill Ryder on CBS Sports Radio.
All right, happy Friday. Bill Ryder with you. Welcome back into the show. As always, the program is brought to you by Quicken Loans, by Rocket Mortgage, by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Will Middlebrooks, former big leaguer, World Series champion with the Red Sox, 2013, going to be on the show at the end of the hour. Jeff Goodman from Stadium, an hour and a half. We got a bunch of great stuff coming up for you. But want to get to this guest right now. I talked at the start of the show an hour ago about the many hurdles emerging in college football for fall football. And at a minimum, the very unique college football experience we're going to get when it rolls around, if it rolls around. And Dennis Dodd, who does an amazing job covering the sport for CBS Sports, wrote a great column on this a while ago. He was ahead of this thing, and he joins me now on the program from, I believe, Kansas City, Missouri, where I'm from, or at least where my kids are born. I lived for a long time. Mr. Dodd, what's up, pal?
I am great. Actually, on the Kansas side of the line, but same metro area. How are you, Bill?
Hanging in there. You know, we're good and healthy and a little stir-crazy and trying to make sense of what college football will do, what they should do. Let's start here, Dennis. What is your reaction? What did you make of the Big Ten's decision to only play at a minimum in conference football games this fall?
Well, I think maybe where we're heading, but as with everything that's happened space since things were shut down March 12th, everybody is acting in their own interest. And the Big Ten did that yesterday. And I'm not judging it. I'm just saying, you know, there's a lot of altruism here. You know, make it as much of a bus league as you can. And I know Nebraska going to Rutgers isn't a bus. But that's essentially what you're trying to do. Limit travel, keep it in-house, limit the exposures, limit the games. But I have to tell you, college football was completely – at least the commissioners were completely surprised by this yesterday. In fact, I had one commissioner tell me Kevin Warren was on a call yesterday with the commissioners and assured them that nothing was imminent. And then that happened. So there, a little bit of animosity. But again, it may all come to the same conclusion, just not at the same time.
Dennis Dodd here on the show. Dennis, to that point, as it relates to reacting to this virus, how we conduct ourselves in public, how we conduct ourselves in terms of the activities that we do all around political lines, around geographical lines, people have reacted in very different ways. What is the possibility that you'll have some conferences go one route with how to address football in this pandemic, and you have other conferences who go a totally different direction?
Well, as of right now, the math works out that the SEC could stay autonomous and still play a full season. They don't have any non-conference games against the Big Ten. And the last time I checked, I don't think they have any against the Pac-12. I may be wrong. But the Pac-12 may be making a decision here soon to go to conference games only. So the SEC retains some sort of autonomy. Not so for the Big 12, which lost just a couple of games to the Big Ten. They could find other opponents, I think, as West Virginia and Iowa State playing Iowa. Those could be made up. And right now, frankly, the SEC and Big 12 are sort of non-committal, shading towards being against it. The ACC is at the point where they're examining it. And the Pac-12, as I said, may announce something soon. But the math is going to come down to, you know, you just can't afford but not to play conference games only because there's no other body to play. Those games have been taken away.
There's no guarantee that there's going to be fall football. And certainly the Big Ten, it sounds like, understand that. Gene Smith saying that he is not as optimistic as he was. Let me give you a scenario. I don't think it's as crazy as it would have seemed a few months ago. If the Big Ten, again, and it's their right to do so, Dennis Dodd, unilaterally makes a decision that they're not going to play any football, they're not doing fall sports, they're not doing fall football, we'll look to the spring, what is the likelihood the SEC could say, to hell with you, we are playing fall football?
I think that's possible. I thought that was possible from the beginning. In fact, reading between the lines, Greg Sankey, the commissioner, was on a radio show in Jacksonville months ago, right after this started. And the question was, could all the conferences could the season start with all the conferences not participating? And he basically said yes, which to me was code for we're going to play no matter what, or we could play no matter what. And so that's what I think could happen to the SEC. Think about this, Bill. They made a decision to not have football in the SEC this fall. Think of the political, sociological fallout alone that would come from whoever decided that, whoever got up in public and said that. Because I don't have to tell you what college football means to the South.
I mean, Dennis Dodd, we've seen health officials have death threats and quit their jobs for asking people to wear masks.
Yes.
You might be in some jeopardy if you're the face of the SEC shutting football down.
I'm not going to go that far, but your first statement was true. We've seen health experts, highly educated health experts threatened because I don't know, science. So
right,
you don't look forward to that. I don't want to conceive of something like that.
So let me ask you this. Let's just take the scenario one step further. The Big Ten shuts down. The Pac-12 shut down. This imaginary scenario, Dennis Dodd. And the SEC plays, maybe the Big 12 plays too. Do we crown a champion at the end of the fall football season? Do we have some sort of truncated or complete four-team playoff that only includes a couple conferences? What's the next step?
I wrote about that a while ago as it applies to the college football playoff. And I got really close to getting access to the contract that addresses that. In other words, my question was, what's a legitimate playoff? Is there language somewhere that says this many schools have to participate for the 10 FBS conferences to get the $475 million they get from ESPN to the CFP every year? Is it a number of schools? Is it certain schools? And I couldn't crack that nut, to find that out. What I think would happen is there would have to be some sort of renegotiation of the deal, because ESPN paid for 130 schools to be part of it. Are they all going to have a shot at it? Absolutely not. But that's what they paid for, and that's where the money goes to. So if they're not all going to play, and there's only a couple of conferences playing, which I think is a long shot to begin with, then where does that money go? That would have to be a really hard and fast renegotiation.
You are listening to the Jim Rome Show. Bill Ryder filling in for Jim, talking to Dennis Dodd, CBS national college football writer, on Twitter at Dennis Dodd CBS. Dennis, there's so many interesting offshoots of what's going to happen now that the Big Ten has made this decision and the Pac-12 and the ACC reportedly will follow suit. If you're Notre Dame and you make the decision as an independent school to play football this fall, what does your schedule look like?
They've already got six games against the ACC. That was reported yesterday. I had talked about it earlier. They've got a good start there with six games against the ACC. They've got that scheduling agreement, so they will have that. I know of a bunch of MAC teams that need games right now. I mean, if they want to fill out a nine-game schedule or a 12-game schedule, you know, there are games out there to be had. And they're still on against USC, as far as I know. Whatever the Pac-12 does, if they go conference games only, they may want to rethink that one and play that game. So, but I think the general feeling is the Notre Dame is not going to be left out. They're too valuable a brand. They've already got a six-game head start into cobbling together some sort of schedule. They will lose, it looks like, the Wisconsin game at Lambeau. And I know that was a favorite for Notre Dame fans. It was a favorite for their AD, Jeff Swarbrick. He really hated to lose that. Maybe that can be made up at a later date. But Notre Dame's going to be taken care of. I think that's the best way to put it.
Dennis, out here on the West Coast, and I didn't go to a Pac-12 school, but it frustrates me to no end living out here. It feels like every year, Oregon usually, but one of the front runners in the Pac-12 lose to some SEC team, and then the whole season's over. Nobody watches Pac-12 football out east. and their shots at a playoff spot more or less go away. I mean, I'm oversimplifying, but that's a real concern. If we go to a conference-only football schedule, does that help the Pac-12 to get into a Final Four if that were to occur, or does it hurt their chances of doing so?
You know, their problem the last 3 years, I would say, has been that a real strong playoff contender hasn't emerged. There was a time there, I think, in 17 and 18, where every team but one of 24 teams, 24 opportunities, all lost three games but one, and that was Washington State, went 11-2 and was not a playoff contender. So that's the problem. They were beating each other up. That being said, exactly what you said is true. They lose the big non-conference game at the beginning of the season, and it makes it really easy to dismiss them. That game this year would have been, or, you know, as far as I know, still is Alabama-USC. The Ohio State-Oregon game is now gone. That would have been a big one. I happen to think, you know, against whatever's been written or said, the conference is kind of on an upturn. I think Oregon has done some things with under Mario Cristobal to make them the favorite, the power, at least in that league. Kyle Whittingham has been unbelievably consistent there. And look, USC, you can make a heck of a case for USC winning the Pac-12 South with all the trouble and criticism Clay Helton gets. But that's the point. It came down to as simple as that. You know, they were beating each other up. They needed a power or two to emerge.
All right, Dennis, let's save the hardest question, but the most important question for last here on the Jim Rome Show. Everything you know, and I know that information is incomplete. That is the definition of this virus. Everything that you've heard today, do you think college football should play in the fall?
I think they should play next spring. I mean, if that's the question, knowing what we know now with the pandemic, you know, with the state of Arizona, I think, having the most cases in the world right now, not to mention Texas blowing up, at least in the spring, you buy yourself some time. And if it keeps going like this, it's going to look like you're throwing the players out there as mercenaries or human shields just to get a portion of that TV revenue. You know, everybody made a big deal out of what the Ivy League did. No, they probably didn't have any influence about what is going on right now by, you know, shipping their season to next spring at the very earliest. They at least can look themselves in the mirror. They've taken the high road. Obviously, look, football's a money loser in that league, or at least money neutral. And so the big difference between the two is that, you know, money talks. And the commissioners and the stakeholders and everybody else has to play football to get a portion, at least a portion of this money. They're not going to get it all, but they want to try to get a portion of it because athletic budgets are just tanking all over the country. You saw it happen to Stanford this week. So they have to play. And if they don't, I shudder to think that Iowa State said we will enter the quote-unquote ice age. He did not elaborate, but you can imagine.
Dennis Dodd, I, by the way, I could not agree with you more about spring football. Buddy, appreciate the time in what are strange times. Stay safe. Best you and your family, and thanks, as always, for making time.
Same to you, Bill. Thanks so much.
Thanks, man. Dennis Dodd on the show, national college football writer, CBS Sports. Dennis Dodd, CBS on Twitter. Look, it's the right answer. It's the only right. By the way, it's the only right answer. And I'll give Dennis credit. It's a lot easier for me to be right about it sitting in Jim Rome's chair, not covering college football for a living. I cover the NBA for a living when I'm not doing this. And I am very glad NBA players get paid money and get to make their own decisions. It allows me not to have to make that morally difficult decision about whether to be honest or not with myself and then with you. Give Dennis Dodd, I do, a ton of credit. He doesn't think the sport that keeps him employed should play this fall. That should tell you everything about Dennis's character and also about the fact there shouldn't be football in the fall. 1-800-636-8686 is the phone number. Give me a call, Bill Ryder, filling in for Jim. Rome at haveatake.com, at Jim Rome, jimrome.com. You can also hit me up on Twitter, Sports Ryder, Sports R-E-I-T-E-R. All right, so people are losing their brains all over the country. And that may have happened a little bit in a tennis match I had yesterday. I'm going to run through a scenario or two, and I'm going to get Adam Hawk's opinion. I guess Tennis Tinder and its fallout continues here on the Jim Rome Show when we continue next.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome back into the Jim Rome Show. Bill Ryder with you, filling in for Jim on this Friday. I'm on Twitter at SportsRider, Sports R-E-I-T-E-R, my last name. And you can call me here on the program, 1-800-636-8686. RomeandHavetake.com, at Jim Rome, JimRome.com. Tonight, at 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific, the PBR Monster Energy Team Challenge Championship gets underway. As the top riders in the world team up to take on the Monster Pit, see what team will be one step closer to being crowned the inaugural champ on CBS Sports Network. One of the things that's really cool about hosting this show, for me, for Mr. Weber yesterday, for all the gentlemen, all the men and women who have the chance to do it, is how much reach the Jim Rome Show has. I marvel every time I do, every time people from high school I haven't heard from in 15 or 20 years. Here are a couple examples. My insurance agent, who's a good guy, but owed me an email. And I was like, oh, I got to follow up with my insurance agent about this thing I asked about 3 weeks ago. Heard me on the show the other day, hit me up. Great to hear you on Rome. Got the work done. My parents, good job, Hy-Vee, walked into a Hy-Vee grocery store in Columbia, Missouri on Tuesday. And there was their son on television on the Jim Rome Show. Even my children, Madeline and Henry, apparently are watching now instead of doing whatever work we wanted them to do. Love you guys. Love you kiddos. Love doing the show. And one of the other cool things is the guys here. I love working with the crew. Garrett Ritt here earlier in the week with Alvin DeLauro. Garrett's still here. Game on, buddy. Adam Hawk on the program. And Adam, I think I may have texted you this. Last time I filled in a month or two ago, somebody sent me a link to something that James Kelly had brought up some gambling thing and a listener had tweeted at me. So I watched it. And then the algorithm kicked you and the Tennis Tinder segment up, where you got, they were merciless to you, my friend. They really went after you.
Yeah, so I use a website that pairs me with like-minded tennis players.
I do too.
Yes, and it's very similar to the way Tinder works, except instead of looking for sex, you're looking for tennis. And tennis is one of these sports I've explained on the air before where as badly as you want to play and play often, the hardest part is finding someone to play with because you need to find someone who is in your similar skill level.
Which is hard to do.
Very hard. And if you're playing with someone who's way worse than you or way better than you, it's horrible for both people. So you have to find someone within your skill level. This website does that. And I tended to go out with old, strange men to play tennis. And that's how this whole Tennis Tinder thing was kind of born on the Jim Rome Show.
All right. So I want to get your expertise here because I don't have to do the Tennis Tinder. I have a league that I'm in. And it's a ladder format where if you win, you move up. If you lose, you move down. You kind of find your skill level. But every summer, they take where they think you're at and they put you in a league with 10 guys. And they bump me way up. I've been playing probably better than I should be. And so at my first match against guys, and you know what USTA ratings are, and they do by the decimal point in this league, even though it's just 3-0, 3-5, 4-0, 4-5, they'll do 4.25. These guys are much higher. They're rated much higher than I am. And I played a guy a couple days ago. And I want your sort of what the right move is here. Nice guy, but I whooped him 6-1 in the first set and was cruising in the second set and then kind of fell apart and lost 4-6. So we had to continue yesterday. He was very angry. Nice guy, but complaining, mumbling how it's the worst thing he's ever played. Very clearly saying, you shouldn't be beating me. And yesterday, we were on serve the whole time. 1-1, 2-2, 3-3, in the decisive set. And we get to 5-3. He's serving. He's down a break. So if he loses that point, I win the match. He's gone into double fault mode. He double faults on the first serve. And then clearly accidentally, with the game on the line, hits a ball down the line. Out by an inch, but out. I call the serve out. Game over. He has a meltdown and insists that the ball is in. What do you do?
I mean, you made the right call. And if he hit his second serve out with the match on the line, that's his fault for not just grooving something right in the middle of the box. I mean, that's what he has to do at that point. And if he's trying to paint lines with a match on the line, especially a match that's gone on for 2 days and is close and he's down a break and you, according to him, are not supposed to be beating him, then he has to do everything he can to make it an obvious call. This is one of the hardest parts about tennis is you are your own lines judge. Yep. And it's really hard because you're trying to play a match while also trying to be a ref. And that's really difficult. And some people take that extremely hard. And when a call doesn't go their way, they get mad. I tend to err on the side of giving people close calls because I'm very non-confrontational. And there's nowhere to hide in tennis. It's just you and that other guy that you're playing. So, but in your case, you made the right call.
Well,
it's out.
I buckled.
You cannot be serious.
I was like, Walter. His name was Walter. Sorry, Walter. Walter, that was out. And he was very animated in that it was in. It was in. It hit the line. It skipped. And I'm like, Walt, I go, you really want me to give you that call? Yes. Okay. And then I proceeded to hit three straight of his serves into the net.
Oh, no.
Melted down, so 5-4. Then I served, and I double-faulted. I was so angry. And then I shoved four or five serves down his face, and that was the end of the match. But I almost lost over it.
So you beat him twice.
I beat him twice.
Great. Good for you for giving Walter what he wanted. Walter seems like a big old diaper baby. No offense, Walter.
Sorry, Walter.
But good for you for giving him what he wanted. I could see how you went into a bad spot mentally where you started to dump serves into the net. But that's pretty tenacious by you to rally back after having
it was close.
That kind of confrontation and then to win.
I almost melted down, though. It was a straight... By the way, there's a 40% chance Walter's listening because every time I play tennis with someone, they ask what I do. They're like, I've never heard of you. I go, no, neither has anyone else. I'm on Jim Rome X day, though. Like, oh, I've heard of that. Walter, if you're listening, that ball was out, bro.
You owe Walter a rematch now. I mean, now you just got to go beat him straight up. I mean, you did twice already, but just beat him again until Walter can't talk about anything.
I feel like I own him mentally now, though, because it was a straight. He was not a happy guy.
Yeah, he doesn't sound like that much fun to play with.
All right, let me give you another one. By the way, can I call Andy Roddick out on this show? Am I allowed to do that?
Please do.
Big Andy Roddick fan. We did a podcast together. He's a great guy with an ornery personality. And I don't like to bother Roddick with these kind of tennis questions. I'm going to ask you, Adam Hawk. But I texted Roddick the other day. I got a tennis question. Can I ask you? Will it annoy you if I ask you a tennis question? And he writes back, you've annoyed me so many times, I don't think it matters. And I write, so I can actually ask you a tennis question. And he writes, of course you can. So here's my question, which he never responded to. Just ghosted me on, just say no. Just say you're Andy Roddick and you're too busy. So, again, a lot of weaknesses on the old tennis game. But I occasionally, though it's inconsistent, have a fairly big serve. And so people sometimes, not the better players, but some players will play me two or three steps behind the baseline.
I know where you're going with this.
Here's my question. And I started doing it. I did it to Walter just to be kind of a jerk. Am I allowed to do an underhand serve when they're paying me three steps behind the baseline?
I mean, yes, you are, but...
You think it's bad for him?
You get your ass kicked on the mean streets of Fullerton. Yeah, that's like, you know, relentlessly going to drop shots. Like, yeah, if you can do it.
Too.
Yeah, so, I mean, yes, you can stretch your opponent out and everything, but going all Nick Kyrgios with it and throwing in a random underhand serve, if you can pull it off, good for you. But at the same time, I mean... You can do it once. If you do it twice, I'm throwing my racket at you.
Oh, no, I do it. So I've started doing it once every service game.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. Just to because I've asked a few people, and they've told me, no, you can do it. So then it's just because people get so angry.
Yeah. I'm angry listening to it,
You think it's wrong?
Oh, I think it's way wrong. Yeah, hit your second serve, man. Hit a big old slice second serve.
I did it on the first serve.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Well, if they're two or three steps back.
Wow. Yeah.
So then they come in two steps, and I just hit a big serve into their body.
That's awesome. I mean,
if we play, I'm going to do it almost every time.
I want to play you now.
I know
I'm
going to
call
do.
Everything out, and I'm going to stand right on the service box line and just smash your big serves back at you.
Well, so here's another one that you probably think is morally wrong. I'm not amazing, but I played, you know, in a tennis league with some really good players, and the level is not a low level. And there's like an octogenarian, 82-year-old gentleman who crushes people. And I hit tons of drop shots because I hit with a lot of topspin. So I put four people back and I hit drop shots against him. And he got angry. Like, we had a whole thing. And I was like, hey, man, I don't have to tell you.
Well, if you're hitting drop shots against geriatric, Bill, you're just a ruthless, ruthless
wrong?
Guy. I kind of appreciate how badly you want to win at all costs, dropping
shots. You think
shots.
It's wrong.
Yes. And let me guess, you put a lot of spin on him, too. So it just bounces right on the other side of the net and then
no,
just darts off. Yeah.
He just stopped running at the end.
Yeah, yeah.
But he was also beating me. I couldn't beat him without it. Like, he's a guy that can't move. He used to be like a 5-0 apparently, and he's 82 now.
He's got old man game. Old man game is tough to beat because they're surgical. They're very accurate. They don't try to do too much. Basically, when you're playing amateur tennis like you and I, the person that can just return the ball the most is always going to win. You're just waiting on the other person
to make
it.
Yeah. You're not a pusher,
well,
are you?
No. I don't like junk ballers. I don't like pushers. But at the same time, those guys win matches because all tennis asks is that you get the ball over the net, which is what you're doing with your lame underhand serve. So to hate a pusher but hit underhand serves and drop shots against an 82-year-old man, I really like your style, Bill.
I didn't do the underhand serve against him.
That's
but
good.
I did do the drop shots.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't wait to play you, man.
Oh, you got a bag of tricks.
No, I'm not. Tell the people your record over the last 40 matches.
Well, but it's at a lower level than you play at, but I am now 34-7 since returning from New York City.
That's awesome.
In matches, in league play.
That's great. I will get my ass kicked by you because I haven't played in a long time, but I'm looking forward to it. I want to see all these trick shots you pull off.
The karma of this is going to be the 400 hate tweets I read later tonight when I'm home about not just filling in for Jim and not being worthy of that, which is true, but also daring to talk about tennis.
We did a whole segment on tennis, on amateur tennis. Good for us.
All right, you and I will play. Maybe next time I'm here, if I'm lucky enough to get another opportunity, I'm here for a couple days next week, but I have to go straight to do CBS Sports HQ work. You and I, we could just pick a weekend. We could Tinder it together.
Let's do it. Tennis Tinder. We'll skip the app. We'll make the date via the cell phones, and we'll do it. We'll have a good time. It'll be great.
The problem, Adam Hawk, is I'm going to end up hitting underhand serves against you because I think it's funny, and you're just going to shove them down my throat. You're just going to like hit winners, and I'm going to keep doing it.
I can't wait. It'll be fun. I got you winning, but it'll be fun.
I've got you winning, too, and the games begin. All right, let's talk some baseball. Will Middlebrooks, former big leaguer, Red Sox for a long time, World Series champion, going to join me on Bill Ryder filling in for Jim Rome here on the Jim Rome Show just after we get a CBS Sports Radio update with Rich Ackerman.
CBS Sports Radio. Sports Flash. Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show with guest host Bill Ryder on CBS Sports Radio.
All right, welcome back into the show. Bill Ryder with you as you get back to business. Granger's there to help. Supplies and solutions for every industry. Free access to product specialists, safety, recovery guides, 24/7 support, and more. Visit Granger.com/recovery. Granger for the ones who get it done. Speaking of the ones who get it done, Will Middlebrooks, one of those guys, when he played in the majors, World Series champion. Catch him now at CBS Sports, CBS Sports HQ. Longtime big leaguer, graciously making some time here on the Jim Rome Show. Will, what's going on, buddy?
Hey guys, what's going on? Thanks for having me.
You guys staying not too stir crazy in these crazy times?
You know, we're doing our best. We're in Florida, which is now the new epicenter. Imagine that, Florida. Yeah, I'm actually hiding in my truck from my two little girls right now, so this works out perfect.
My wife is equally happy that I'm not in the house doing the Jim Rome Show, Will Middlebrooks. So, look, I'm excited about baseball, and it's great. It looks like we're going to get there. But certainly there are some folks, myself included, who believe that Robert Manfred and the folks in charge should have had baseball going by now. What do you make of the fact that we're still not underway with actual games that count?
Yeah, I know. Most people's views on this right now are, you know, they're just staying on the game because of the economic disagreement between the owners and the players. But if you look at what was going on with a global health crisis, I really don't know if the players could be on the field yet. That was kind of put on the back burner because we were talking about money for 3 months. But, I mean, with how everything has been with COVID, I'm not sure they could have started. And if they did, they may have had to stop, and that would have put an even longer pause on the season. So I think they're on track. I think they do start the season. I'd be really surprised if they finish the season.
Will Middlebrooks here on the show. Interesting. So you're not optimistic, it sounds like, that we'll crown a World Series champion.
You know, I know the percentages are low right now with all the testing, all the numbers coming out now, and it looks like it's even under 1% now. But the issue is going to be controlling grown men traveling to different cities and staying in hotels. They're not contract contact tracing guys until they test positive. So they don't know who they're in contact in all these different cities. They don't know who they're going out to dinner with, who's coming to the hotel, who they're hanging out with. They can't control them. They're grown men making millions of dollars to play baseball. So they're not going to tell them, hey, here's your leash and you have to stay on it and sit in your hotel room. You have to trust those players. Now, there's two sides of that. There's the young players who, look, I got to the big leagues when I was 23 and I was invincible. I get it. I was Superman. I worked my whole life to get to this point. I made it. I was on top of the world. Nothing could hurt me. Well, that's not good where we're at right now. Is it going to affect the young guys much? Probably not, but they can affect the older players, family. We know how that goes. I'm not a scientist or a medical expert, but we all know that's how it works. Now, the older players are going to be much more cautious. They have families. They have children. They have maybe parents that are with them during the season to help with their family, and they're going to be the ones that are going to stay in their hotel rooms and take care of their business. You just got to worry about the young guys going out and partying.
MLB analyst Will Middlebrooks here on the program. Will, you've got a young family. If you were in the middle of your playing career with that young family, what decision would you make about returning or not to baseball?
You know, I've been asked this several times, and that I don't even have to make that decision, and that is a very tough one for me to even come up with an answer to. I think right now, you know, I have a 21-month-old and a 6-month-old. That raises a problem for me. I think I would probably play the season, but without my family. I think them staying home would be the best option. Now, that would be very tough because I would want to be around my family, obviously, but you just can't risk that. So best case scenario for me, I would have to just go without them.
Well, if we have a season, if we're able to get through these 60 games and get to a postseason and play through it, it's going to be obviously a very unusual run to a World Series champion. What kind of a team in a truncated schedule, a truncated season, what kind of team has the advantage this year?
You know, I still think the best teams will win the divisions. We look at a lot of these, you know, there's two divisions that are completely stacked with talent, and there's four teams that could win it. You know, with the AL or the NL Central, NL East, you know, I went out on a limb and I picked the Mets to win the NL East. I got called crazy. That's fine. I really like that team, and I think in a 60-game season, they can make it happen. I like their rotation even without Syndergaard. If they stay healthy, that's the issue because I don't feel like they have much depth in their starting rotation with Syndergaard out because they're using that fifth guy in Waka who they signed. So I think they'll be good through 60 games. And another team I think this really helps is the Chicago White Sox in the AL Central. This is going to help them stay with the Indians and the Twins atop that division because they're able to play in division. They're able to play the Tigers and the Royals and then in interleague play the Pirates. Those are three teams that are projected to win between 20 and 25 games, and I really expect the under on that. So that's an advantage for a young up-and-coming team to gain some steam, stay at the top of the standings, and build some confidence going into 2021.
You know, we're out here, or at least I'm out here in L.A., and the Dodgers year after year have massive expectations. Of late, they've almost made good on them, but we know they haven't been able to get it done. Mookie Betts is a big part of the optimism, the renewed optimism here with Dodgers fans. You guys overlapped, I think, for a year in Boston.
What are your 14.
Yeah, that's right. What are your expectations, assuming he plays, from Mookie with the Dodgers?
Mookie is the perfect combination of just naturally gifted at literally everything. He's a 300 bowler, for God's sake. Like this, he plays. He'll beat you in darts. He'll beat you in bags. Like whatever he does, he's just really good at. And on top of that, he's a really hard worker and he's just a gamer. He gets it. He works hard, and he deserves everything he's had. So I think going into this season, he knows, all right, is the market going to be different next year? Yes, obviously it is because it's a 60-game season. So he knows he's got to ball out to get that money that he wants. He's still going to get paid. We know that. He's going to get broke off. We're aware of that, and he deserves it. But I think he will really rise to the occasion in the 60 games. Most players, I think, would press, and it would be an issue, and they would struggle, but I really expect – MVP-type season out of Mookie Betts.
Well, what do you think Clayton Kershaw has left, not just in the tank, he'll be the opening day starter, but if and when the Dodgers get to a postseason to try and change the narrative about what he's about in the playoffs?
I think not if they get to the playoffs. They're going to get to the playoffs this year. Let's be honest, they're going to win that division. But I think the fact that he is getting older, he has there's only so many bullets in the gun, and you know, he's getting older and he's throwing a lot of innings. but this short season is going to help him a lot. I think he knows how to manage his body. I think he's going to be much more fresh. And, I mean, that's a guy who doesn't miss many starts throughout the season. You get to the postseason, he's thrown over 200 innings, and he's gassed. I think that plays into a lot of it. It's just fatigue at later in the season. So I think he will be in a very good position to be successful in the postseason this year.
What are the challenges? I get he's Clayton Kershaw, but to your point, if he's gassed year after year, why not at a certain point, if you're the Dodgers brass, you're Dave Roberts, you're Andrew Friedman, you're anybody in that organization, just say to hell with Kershaw being mad in the short term, we are going to limit his innings and he's just going to have to deal with it.
Yeah, that's a tough decision. I think that just comes down to a man-to-man respect they have for him and what he's done for that organization. I think he's been there for, I don't even know how many years. It seems like forever. But yeah, he's getting towards the end of that rope in his career. You got Walker Buehler right there who's ready to take over the ace spot, and then whoever they can go out and get whoever they want with the money they have in that organization. So he's going to need to have a really good year going forward to remain that guy.
Will Middlebrooks here on the Jim Rome Show. Bill Ryder filling in for Jim. All right, Will, so every spring, it's so weird, I'm going to ask you this question in July. Every spring, every team in Major League Baseball, their fans get to close their eyes and lie to themselves and pretend that they're contenders. I certainly did that my whole life as a Cubs fan, and then it finally came true in the middle age of my years. Give me a team. You know, maybe I know Padres fans are really optimistic, and we're on the home of the Padres, our great affiliate, 97.3 The Fan in San Diego. Give me a team that has a chance, as a wild card team or otherwise, to surprise some people in this shortened season and make a run a lot of folks may not anticipate.
I think it's, you know, I talked about the Mets earlier, but another team, it has to be the Cincinnati Reds.
Mm, yeah.
I mean, they're on the radar right now. They made a lot of moves this offseason. I think in a 60-game season with some good starting pitching, you know, they have Castillo, who is an all-star with that nasty changeup. Sonny Gray, he's kind of resurrected his career and looked really good. He looked a lot better last year. And then Trevor Bauer, if he can get off Twitter and throw some strikes, he'll be great. But you look at their offense. They added Moustakas. They have Castellanos. I mean, Dietrich's going to hit for power. He's not going to hit for average, but he's going to have some big knocks for him. And it's all about timely hitting and starting pitching, in my opinion, and I think they have a lot of that going on right now.
Well, I think that description of Trevor Bauer, get off Twitter and throw some strikes, might be the most apt description of a ball player I've ever heard.
You know what? I will say this about Trevor Bauer. Everything he says as far as the game goes on Twitter is spot on. He tells the absolute truth that no one else, especially current players, I mean, they current players aren't going to go on there and talk about the things he talks about. And it's the absolute truth and how everyone feels about the battle between the players and the owner. So he's very vocal. Yes, I know it can rub a lot of people the wrong way, but everything he says is true. I will tell you that.
All right, well, last one for you. I'm a Cubs fan. I got to get a Cubs question in. But I'm always interested from a former player like yourself, how much the drama of contracts and uncertainty and pending free agency does or doesn't affect the team. And for that Cubs squad, a lot of guys that are critical to not just their future success, but the World Series they've actually had, rest with dudes, Javi Baez, Chris Bryant, who have some decisions to make, and the Cubs have some decisions to make. How does that impact a club when some of the most important guys' futures are uncertain heading into a season?
Well, you know, something that people don't think about when it comes to that, a lot of people just think about players seeing money signs and where they're going to spend the rest of their career. But let's think about who their manager is. They wanted David Ross as their manager. They played with David Ross. I've played with David Ross. And this is a man that is a leader of men. He can lead that team. He has the respect of these players already. And I think a lot of that and a lot of the players will stick around and want to be a part of what David Ross is going to do. I think he's going to be a great manager, and I think that's going to help players stick around Chicago.
I'm gonna write that down, put it in my wallet, and just cling to it because as a Cubs fan, Will, I don't celebrate success. I just fear failure. That's the way that I've been trained. Hey, buddy, great stuff. You've been killing it on CBS Sports HQ, and really appreciate you, man, making time here on the Jim Rome Show.
Well, of course. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Will. Be good. Will Middlebrooks on the program. Check him out on CBS Sports HQ at Middlebrooks on Twitter. 1-800-636-8686. You want to give us a call. I'm Bill Ryder, filling in for Jim here on the Jim Rome Show. RomanHaveATake.com, at Jim Rome, JimRome.com. We're going to get, I've got a take on LeBron James, and we'll do this here in just a little while. I think this, Giannis said it, this pandemic is such a remarkable opportunity for LeBron James to maybe pass Michael Jordan. We'll get into that in a second.
Me?
Oh, you, buddy. You big guy. Man, LeBron's such an interesting cat. A little shout out to CBS. You know what? You're watching on CBS Sports Network. You're listening on CBS Sports Radio. I'm a guy that works for CBS Sports HQ. And we're going to limit our soccer take to 60 seconds today, but we're going to get it in there. Congratulations to CBS. Champions League, those of you non-soccer fans, it's the best teams in Europe that play in a tournament against one another. Reverting to CBS a couple years ahead of schedule. Pretty excited. Barcelona, Real Madrid, PSG. This is a huge opportunity for CBS. It's an incredible tournament. Couldn't be more excited about it. And I would imagine you're going to start to see a lot more soccer coverage on CBS Sports HQ. They killed it, CBS Sports HQ, this morning with the announcement. All right, 1 hour to go. Now, this show flies by. When I did my show on CBS Sports Radio, it was 4 hours, and I loved it, but that was a long time. 3 hours doing Jim Rome, living the dream, working with the guys, telling stories about what a terrible person I am, making octogenarians run for drop shots. Love every moment of it. Jeff Goodman coming up next hour. My LeBron James take coming up next hour. Your phone calls at 1-800-636-8686. We got an hour to go, and we'll hit LeBron James and the test of his true greatness. That's what's coming up in the next month or so when we continue next here on the Jim Rome Show.